Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today and sitting in for our regular host, Juanita Watson. Today I'm delighted to be speaking on the phone with Dr. Karen Sherman. She is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life, Second Edition. Stay tuned, because today we're going to be talking to Karen about the areas in our lives that we may not be overly happy about, or maybe that are causing us a little distension. We're also going to be talking about taking steps and how to take these steps in making these changes and the transformations that we want in our lives. But first of all, a little bit about Karen. Dr. Karen Sherman, a licensed psychologist in New York, has been in private practice for over 20 years. Her focus in this business is relationships and marriage and helping people to achieve their greatest potential. And as you will hear later on when we do talk to her, she certainly has a lot of knowledge in this area. Karen is an author, as said, of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life, which enables people to let go of conditioned responses and empower them to make their own choices. And she's also the co-author of Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last. And she's a contributor to 101 Great Ways to Improve Your Life, Volume 2. She certainly has been in the industry of books. She is a featured writer on Yahoo Personals, a relationship blogger for ThirdAge.com, and writes the Disputes column for HitchMag.com. Karen also conducts workshops, sales seminars, and speaking engagements. And she is a frequent guest on national radio, and her expert opinion has appeared in numerous publications. So we're really, really happy that we were able to talk to her on Inside Scoop Live. Additionally, she was a former relationship expert on the Boat Griffin Morning Show and a marriage expert on ClubMom.com. Karen and her husband have enjoyed over 30 years of marriage and have two daughters, a son-in-law, and a grandson. Hi, Karen. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live.
Hi, Irene. Thank you so much for having me with you.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and I'm just looking forward to talking to you because I've read your book, and I really like it. I do. It really gave me a place that I could direct and focus and make some changes in my life, and that's, of course, what your subtitle is here, Transform Your Life. And I would just like to have you talk about transforming lives and why it's really necessary for us to do that.
Well, it's my belief that unfortunately, many of us are going through our lives sort of without really making choices, because we're living based on the patterns that we learned in our childhood, and we're just reacting to life. We're not really being mindful of it, being aware of what's going on. So it's really just habitual. And when we do that, we're not having a life that we're choosing. So I think it's important to have the opportunity to, really be able to live to your fullest potential.
Oh, I so agree with you, and that's certainly one thing that I finally got that I had to do. And you said, living with the patterns of childhood and just knowing a bit about this, that these imprints are often carried down for generations and generations. And we, of course, we take them on because that's what we learn.
Right.
And so I want you to talk about this learning, how that really happens.
Well, I think I agree with you that many times it's things that we really have passed on from generations and generations. But more specifically, when we're children, we don't really know how to think about the world. Our cognitive brain has not been formed, and we just experience the world. So we want mommy and daddy to love us. I mean, we all want to be loved. And so whatever we do as children that pleases mommy and daddy, and then we get that love from them that makes us feel good, we continue to learn to do those same behaviors. Now, because our only exposure in the world is to whatever's going on in our house, we don't necessarily know if that's truly normal or dysfunctional. So we just continue to do it.
And it's normal, really, because we think it's normal.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And we think everybody else is the same.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you should say that, Irene, because I'm reminded of a young lady that I met who did not know until she got to college and was talking to some other gals that she met there that the fact that as a teenager she was still lying in bed with her father spooning, that that was inappropriate. Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. When you said that, I just reflected back that I remember my first time that I went to a wedding outside of my community. I mean, I was totally shocked because I thought that all weddings were like they were in my community.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and it's like, what? They don't do this and they don't do that. And they're just doing this. It's like there is no huge meal. They're just having cake and punch. It's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, again, going back to children, you know, whatever goes on in our house, we adapt to, we learn to please our parents, and then those patterns and those behaviors get wired into our brain. And so we continue to do them, and we just go on and on and on, and we bring that out into the world. So if you've learned, as an example, to please your parents, to maybe take on responsibilities as a little adult that you really shouldn't have to do as a child, then you're going to be a people pleaser for the rest of your life. And unfortunately, many times, that's really dysfunctional later in life. It's not really helping you, but yet you keep continuing those same patterns.
Exactly. And, you know, then we also, through that, we can become caretakers instead of caregivers.
Right.
Which is the difference. And I want you to just explain to our listening audience what the difference is.
Well, you know, let's say if you're a people pleaser and you become a caretaker, one of the examples that I think of very often is, let's say that you end up getting involved with somebody who is alcoholic. And so now you are taking care of this person all the time. And when you first met this person, you didn't realize it. And so then into the relationship, you realize that you're not really being given to. You're just constantly taking care of this other person. It's not really a reciprocal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually you decide, okay, this is not a healthy relationship and I'm going to break up with this person and I'm not going to do this again. So now you get involved with somebody else who looks very different and you get involved and everything seems fine. But then somewhere down the road, let's say this person is not alcoholic but can never keep a job.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, you are taking care of this person and not being given to. So you're playing out the same role. And again, you're just really reenacting the pattern that you learned from when you were a child. And that's going to keep going on unless you really, you know, start to work on transforming who you are.
I so agree. And, you know, being in the same situation myself as being a codependent caregiver instead of caregiver, and, you know, a person really gets into that rut.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you call autopilot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's talk about autopilot.
Well, the term comes really from something that actually happens on planes where pilots do put the plane on autopilot where they basically fly themselves. So I don't want to freak anybody out. Not that the pilots aren't sort of watching what's going on, but if everything's okay, the planes can fly themselves. But people function many times without really monitoring what they're doing. They're just going through life or through their routines without really paying attention to what they're doing. They're just, you know, doing it. So you can get into a car and drive from one place to another, and you get there and you sort of feel like, how did I get here? You don't even, you know, remember driving there. So unfortunately, a lot of what we do is that very habitual, very practiced kind of experience where you don't really monitor what you're doing, where you're not really aware of either what you're doing or what you're feeling.
And you've used such a good example using the car because you know, after many years of driving, that's how we get. And it's the same thing as many years of having that same pattern or the same, it becomes a habit, and we, people aren't aware. And so how, you know, what do we do? We finally got this awareness. It's like, uh-oh, this is not right. I need to make some changes.
Yeah, well, you just, Irene, hit on something that's really, really important. You know, you cannot make a change if you're not aware that something needs to be changed. So that's a really, really good first step, you know.
Uh-huh.
But after that, what I would say is that I really like for people to pay attention to their bodies, because any time that you're feeling something emotionally, there will also be a physical sensation in your body. When you're totally relaxed and calm, so is your body. But unfortunately, in Western society, we have emphasized the thought process so much that most of us are cut off at the necks. And by that, what I mean is we don't pay attention to our bodies. We are not aware of what our bodies are feeling. So if we learn to sort of say, hey, you know, what is it that we are experiencing in our bodies? What are the sensations we're feeling? Then when we feel a tension or a tightness, we can then use that as a window to then say, okay, what's going on for me emotionally? You know, is something bothering me? So that's the first way to sort of, you know, get into the work that has to be done.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've said something very important here, that emotions actually do affect our physical being. And I know that, you know, there's been a lot of studies done that the emotions can act and react in a way that they will cause diseases in the body, physical diseases.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of information we now have that really our emotions also can make us sick.
Yeah.
You know, but what happens, as you know, as I said before, is a lot of times we're not even picking up those
mm-hmm.
signals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many times I've met with people who come in and they say that they have an anger control issue, an anger impulse problem.
Uh-huh.
And when we start to work together, it really turns out that, again, they have just not picked up their signals. And when we slow it down and I ask them to start to really be aware of what they start to feel in their body as things are happening, and then start to respond as they start to feel the tightness in their chest or in their shoulders or behind their neck, and take some action, it doesn't get to the point where the anger builds up to such a point that they explode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's almost like a kid who doesn't pay attention when they get bodily signals, you know, when they're being toilet trained and they have an accident.
Yeah, same thing, isn't it? So your book is actually called Mindfulness and the Art of Choice. So what is the difference between mindfulness and the awareness that we're talking about?
Well, in my way of thinking, awareness means just that, being aware, noticing. Mindful to me means really taking a little bit more action, doing something more about it. So as we, you know, said before, you have to be aware that there's you know, something going on, but then you have to really be proactive and be mindful that you want to now do something more about it.
And it has to be a really deep desire, doesn't it? Because it just doesn't work. If, you know, I say, well, yeah, I need to change this, I'm going to change it, and then that's it. I don't do anything about it.
Yeah, you do. You
yeah.
do. You know, it's funny, because I was working with a client earlier today, and she's unfortunately in a very, very difficult marriage, and I was coming up with different things to help her. And basically what she was saying to me is, you know, nah, that's not going to work, that's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
And what she finally acknowledged was that she wasn't really ready to work it. And just like you were saying, Irene, you know, you've got to be willing to really say, I'm willing to make this change, to do what I have to. Now, clearly, change is not going to take place overnight, and it would be unrealistic to expect to do large amounts of change all at once because it's just too much. But unless you're willing to really be motivated to make a change, then nothing's going to happen.
It's so true. And, you know, the old adage of it's like peeling an onion, you know, layer by layer.
Yes.
And although sometimes I know we get very impatient, and I'm one of them, it's like, okay, I've made up my mind, I'm going to make this change. It's like, I want it now, but that doesn't work. But on the other hand, why are people actually, reluctant or hesitant to take action? What is really that bottom fear or whatever that's going on?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a fear. You know, it's a fear of the unknown. You've been doing this other pattern for so long that even though you may not be getting the results you want, you know what the outcome is. So it's very comfortable. It's your script. If I say to you instead, well, you're not going to do this, you know, you're going to do something that's different, you don't know what that is. It's scary. It's uncomfortable. It requires adjustment. Change does require adjustment. So people are hesitant to do it.
Yeah. Fear is just, you know, it's so strong.
Yeah.
And so I want to get you to give us some examples of some of the fears that people have used as to not to make the transformation so that our listeners can actually relate and say, oh, that's my fear. Okay, so now that I know it's my fear, I'm going to make some decisions. So what are some of the, you know, fears that a lot of people come up with?
Well, I don't think that people ever say, here are my fears. I think they come up with a lot of excuses.
Ah.
Okay, nobody ever says, here's my fear. There's another client that has a compulsive gambling problem, and she has been recommended to go to this wonderful treatment program that's 30 days that has a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And she has come up with a number of excuses as to why she can't go now. And so we went through one by one how we would handle each of those practical concerns that she has. And when we finally went through each one of them, she finally said, I'm afraid. So that's the way it's going to come out. It's going to come out more with obstacles that people put in the way of why they can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, it's a fear. It's a fear maybe of either there'll be a failure or a fear of that they will do it and they're not comfortable in succeeding. Or it's also, and this is true, very often when you are a different person, those around you are not accustomed to the new you.
Oh, that was just in my mind, and I was going to bring that up. And that is so true, isn't it?
Yes.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Dr. Karen Sherman. As you have heard so far, Karen is helping us to understand about the issues in our lives and how to address them. Our conversation is very much in line with her recent book, Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. And we have this fear that we're going to lose all our friends and our family isn't going to be accepting us. We're going to be the black sheep of the family, and it goes on and on and on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That abandonment issue is huge.
Yes. yes, people won't like me if I'm like
uh-huh.
this.
Uh-huh.
You know, people will not be happy if I speak up. You know, people are not accustomed to me being like this. That's a scary thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a scary thing. And again, what I would then tell people is, well, you know, asserting yourself doesn't mean you're going to come in there and, like, you know, really blow people out of the water. There are lots of ways to take steps to be self-respecting where you also don't have to be disrespectful to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said change doesn't have to take place in these grandiose ways. It can be in very, you know, small ways and little bits at a time.
Yeah.
I guess it has to get to a point where people really feel that the life that they're living is really not providing them with either satisfactory results
mm-hmm.
or enough joy or satisfaction. Unfortunately, and I bet you know this, Irene, that a lot of times it takes somebody hitting rock bottom before they finally say enough. It's time to make change.
I would say probably 95%, and I'm probably low.
Yeah.
You know, and as I was listening to you, I was thinking, reflecting back to some of my own experiences and the fear that I had of making the change that I knew I had to, you know, do. I was very aware of it, but it was that being alone or the loneliness. That was my huge fear.
Mm-hmm.
But when I finally just got over that and I had to leave the friends and family that didn't fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the quality of friends that I
mm-hmm.
have now is
mm-hmm.
phenomenal because we're all on the same page. We talk the same language. We support each other. And so there's that benefit that comes out of it.
Right, because your whole energy changed.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. So in your book, and you as a therapist, do promote visualization, free association writing, and, you know, a lot of these inner types of therapies. And I think you just talk about what you really do suggest for people to do in that aspect and why it works.
I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to reverse what you asked me, and I'm
okay.
going to talk about why I feel that this works better than talk therapy.
Good.
And then I'll discuss them more specifically. What happens when you go to talk therapy is that you talk therapy, basically you're talking to a therapist and you're learning about what your issues were and why things happened, et cetera. And I think that that has real value because I think that gaining insight and understanding yourself really has a very important place. However, for a lot of people, it's not enough. The kinds of things that a lot of children experience has energy around it, has leftover feelings around it, and that gets stored in the body. And what then happens is later in life, when one is in a situation that feels the same, excuse me, that feels the same, those energies get re-triggered. Your buttons get pushed. That would be the way we would describe it in lay language. And so in the moment, feels as if you were reacting to what just happened, but it's really not. It's really because it has set off this old feeling. And so since you are having this strong emotional reaction, you're not able to clearly think about what your options are. And that's why you're not really free to make choices, because when you're emotional, you can't think clearly. And so the tools that I'm recommending, and there are many different tools, but the tools that I'm recommending are ones that allow the person to really heal these old wounds by doing some work with these old energies.
Mm-hmm.
So one tool is visualizations. It's hard to just explain in short form, but basically has to do with allowing the person to really go back to the old memories, to bring them up, and to sort of replay them in your imagination, but recreate new endings. Because when the old feelings come up again, then it's activated in the brain in a raw form. But when you make new endings, the brain is making new connections. We've now learned that the brain can make new connections. We used to think years ago that when the brain was done growing, it was done growing, but that's not true. So, again, this is not a quick fix. This has to take place over time. But if you keep replaying these old wounds, but make new connections, the old connections wither away. So that's visualizations.
Mm-hmm.
The other major tool that I like to use is free association writing. And this is that when a person gets upset about something or wants to deal with something, they start writing, and they write as fast as they possibly can. They never lift their pen from the paper because we don't want their thoughts. We're trying to bypass cognition and get to the emotions. If at some point they don't know what to write, they keep writing, "I don't know what to write," again, so that way the emotions keep coming out. This serves two purposes. Number one, it allows a purging, a vomiting, if you will, of the emotions. And if you do that, then they're not inside you. So it helps to release them. The second is that for some people, if they aren't aware of what they were feeling, by rereading what's there, it allows you to gain some insight as to what you were feeling, and then you can do the visualizations with some of that work.
Those are two such powerful, powerful tools, and I can attest to it because I'm using both.
Are you?
I am. Oh, of course, and I have for many, many years, and I know that it works. I know it works. There are times that what I want to add about the free association writing is if I'm really stuck and it's like I am gone blank because I'm in some kind of a blockage or denial or whatever it is, I write with my dominant hand.
Mm.
And that works for me.
Yes, that's a great suggestion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm sorry I didn't put it in the book. That's a great suggestion.
Next one. But it does work. And then once I get the flow going, I can't, you know, difficult. It's really difficult to write with a non-dominant hand, but once I start flowing, I can then continue writing with my dominant hand. And what I really like, the fact that you talked about the visualization, is recreating new ending. And, you know, for some of our listeners, that this might just be really bizarre, like how can you recreate the new ending? It's like, but it happened this way. But no, you can. And I just really want you to talk a little bit more about recreating and what really happens in the brain when you do that.
Well, I'm glad that you asked me to clarify that, because it does not have to be historically correct. You know, let's say that you go back to something where daddy spoke really badly to you and made you feel terrible. Well, again, what I have clients do is first feel it in their body, because we want this to be a bodily energy. And once they feel it in their body, then go through the memory in your imagination, play it out, allow the memory to come up, and then, you know, maybe let yourself as the little person, let daddy know how badly you felt. That, you know, why are you talking to me like that? That doesn't feel really good to me, because that way the expression that was never allowed to come out is, in fact, coming out. But now you change it. Daddy says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I really didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't realize I upset you." So once these feelings are getting activated, the neurons in the brain are stimulated, and the brain is making a connection between the situation and the response, and that's how the new neural connection is being made. The old feeling is now getting a different reaction, and so it is eventually healing that old pain, that old wound.
It sounds bizarre, but it really does happen. Scientifically,
yeah.
It has been proven that this does happen. Now, Karen, I know that some of the listeners are saying, "Wow, you know, if I get into the visualization, I go deep and I get into this pain, I'm going to feel this pain.
Mm-hmm.
I might get stuck in this pain.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? How can I, in my mind or emotion, rationalize that maybe daddy said something different, or, you know, recreate that ending? But when a person is just in such deep pain and re-experiencing it again,
well,
what do you suggest that they do?
Well, two things. First of all, I am going to say that for some people, it might be better to use the book with the help of a therapist. Have the therapist, you know, work with the person.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think a lot of people are afraid to go back and feel their pain because it's like, even the thought of it is like, oh, God, you know, I don't want to really go there. The whole thought of it is just, you know, terrible and just let me forget about it. But we stored that pain when we were little.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because we were little, everything seems much bigger and louder and more intense than it does when we're an adult. So the analogy that I'd like to use is that, Irene, if you and I went back to a classroom that's a kindergarten classroom, we would look at the chairs and we'd say, oh, aren't they so cute?
Mm-hmm.
But when we were kindergartners, they weren't cute. They were the right size.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, if a person will allow themselves to go back to that feeling, yeah, it's going to hurt for the moment. But if you allow yourself to dance with the feeling,
uh-huh.
to really sit with it a little bit, it really does transform. It only hurts for a little bit, and then it really does go away. And again, you're in control of your visualization. I mean, if you're not, if it's feeling uncomfortable to you, open your eyes.
Yeah, good point.
You know, nobody's making you do this.
Yeah.
But it really does transform. And so I really want to let people know that the more that they're willing to embrace these feelings and to offer them the chance to be expressed in a way that they never had the opportunity to be verbalized or communicated as a child, the more that they will go away. It's almost like, you know, a little kid now, if they tug at you as an adult and you're busy and you say just a moment, the child doesn't go away, right?
Right.
But when you turn around and you say, yes, sweetie, what is it? Then the child goes away. They leave you alone.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It, you know, those are such good points. One thing that works for me, Karen, about when I'm visualizing and I'm in a painful situation is step away from it and be an observer for a minute or 30 seconds, whatever it takes. And for me, it just works to observe it and then get back in there.
Yes, that's a great idea. You know what I do? You know what I do tell some clients when I'm working with them? If they're too close to it, sometimes I tell them to pretend that they're in the movies.
Uh-huh.
And pretend that the visualization that they're seeing is the movie. So just like you're saying, they're the observer of the movie.
Yeah.
Rather than doing it like, you know, one step closer in their heads. They're actually watching the movie being the situation.
Yeah. And it works. It works whatever, you know, whatever way. And basically what I always say, too, is whatever works for you. And each one of us is different.
Absolutely.
And I really like the fact that you said to get somebody to guide you.
Yes.
Especially the first few times until, you know, the person is really knows what they're doing and feels comfortable in doing their own visualizations, because some of that stuff can come up and like, oh, no, what do I do with it now?
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm glad you had mentioned that. Gosh, Karen, this is a great book, Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. And listeners, there are all kinds of things in this book. There are exercises, there's explanation. Karen's done a great job with it. And what I really like about it, Karen, what you did is you did it in lay language. There's nothing about it that is beyond a normal person.
Oh, thanks, Irene.
It is. It's just, you know, it's a good guide. It's a great guide. Now, I would like you to tell our listening audience what your website addresses are. You have two of them.
I do. One is my name. I'm going to spell it because there's so many different versions. It's www.drkarenshermann.com, Dr. Karen Sherman. The other one is Choice Relationships. That's one word, but plural.com.
Great. That's choicerelationships.com or drkarensherman.com. Now, before we close, Karen, what do you have some final message or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes. I wrote the book not just as a psychologist, but because I actually had a very personal traumatic experience where I hit rock bottom. And so I felt it was important for people to know that you can break away from your childhood experiences, no matter how dysfunctional they were. And this is not just for people who have had horrible dysfunction. There can even be things that, you know, have happened, messages you've gotten that have made you feel not good or whatever. But my main point is I wanted people to know that everybody deserves to have a good life and that you can have it. And I've done it, and I wrote the book so that people know that they can do it as well. So I really thank you, Irene, for speaking with me and helping me to get that message out to people.
Well, thank you, Karen. And, you know, those are so such great words of wisdom, because we all want to better ourselves and have a better life. So, listeners, there you go. This is Dr. Karen Sherman, and she is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. I do encourage you to check her website out, and also the book. As I said before, it really is a layperson type of book. It has some great exercises in it and simple explanations for you to really know what's going on, for you to become aware, as she says, transform your life and have a better life now and today. And thanks again for listening.